Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. My guests for this morning are Andrea and Keston Oddahl. They are founders of the Delaney Oddahl Foundation. They are also advocates of early intervention for family expecting special needs children. Andrea, Keston, and I will be having a candid conversation about their uplifting and inspiring memoir, Saving Delaney from Surrogacy to Family. Good morning, ladies. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you two doing this morning?
We're awesome. Good morning, Johnny. Excited to be on your show. Thank you.
You're welcome. It is great and pleasure to have both of you on the air with me. I have to apologize. I'm coming down with something here, so my voice is rather coarse, but I wouldn't miss it for this morning to have you ladies on the air with me. Saving Delaney from Surrogacy to Family is a terrific book. It is well written. In reading the book, three themes came to mind: the power of relationship, the nature of love, and the meaning of life. These are the theme that I really treasure very much, and I could tell you that you two put your heart and soul in the book. So thank you for sharing your story with the world. Congratulations.
Thank you. That's really sweet of you to say.
Let us start by getting to know you two a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, I guess we'll start with me. This is Keston. Today I'm 50 years old, and I grew up in Southern California in a very conservative Orange County. And, I was just a typical 80s girl, and ended up becoming a lead singer in a rock band, and I'm a kind of a speaker myself, and I'm out there and outgoing. And lucky thing, I met beautiful Andrea, who I'll let her take over and tell you about her youth.
I was born and raised also in California, but in the San Francisco Bay Area. My parents divorced when I was 11, and I have been married before, and I have two children from that relationship, Jared and Juliana, who are 10 and 7. And then I met Keston.
You know, I have two children as well, but my children are adults. Yeah, and I was raised by my single mom.
Talking about growing up in the 80s, the first thing came to mind when you talk about you in the band and so forth is Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. I just had to throw that in.
Oh, my goodness. I was more into Led Zeppelin.
That's a little bit on the high end. How's that?
Yeah. I love the 80s.
Fantastic. What childhood experiences influence your outlook about life most?
Well, for me, this is Keston, for me, it was definitely my mother. My mom was a single mom. She raised five children by herself during a time when she didn't get child support, and she never complained about not getting as much money as men. And my brothers and sisters and I will tell you, we never wanted for anything.
Yeah.
And it must have been a struggle for her. She had sometimes three jobs during Christmas just to get us Christmas presents. And she was just, Johnny, she was like a starlet. She was beautiful and elegant, yet a renaissance woman of her time, because she worked so hard. She was so freaking smart.
Mm-hmm.
So she influenced me. I ended up growing up wanting to emulate her and being anything and everything like her.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big influence in my life.
In reading your book, one of the things that I gather, you have a very strong mom, and it reminded me of my mom in Malaysia, because I think that's the generation where there is that sort of a subtle shift from women being just in the kitchen to now I am woman, I have to take charge of myself. And of course, in your case, her being a single mom, that she is the breadwinner of the family. She has responsibility for herself and also her children.
Right, with no help.
Yeah.
She was a tough cookie, and she was beautiful. She looked like Grace Kelly.
Wonderful. How about you, Andrea?
Andrea had a different upbringing. She was raised by, her dad is Swiss and her mom is Korean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, both
Both emotional.
Yeah, I was going to say, both my parents are very, just not super emotional. They're not super affectionate. They're not really the type of people that will, you know, walk around and praise you and
her
mom's like that.
Good. Her mom's
As they've gotten older, they've gotten better. But growing up, I had kind of a very, I guess, cold.
And it hurts her to say that. But
because I absolutely love my parents, and I know that they just did the best that they could do, and that's how they were brought. You know,
right.
Both, just my family on both sides are very private people. And so I grew up being a very private person as well.
Well, from a Korean background for your mom, I'm sure she's very reserved and very subdued in many ways. Yeah, so
exactly.
I can relate to that, you know, from the Asian culture from that standpoint.
And right.
Yeah, and especially from that period, that generation, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's different from today's generation, but certainly at that generation, she's a little bit more subdued and very reserved and so forth, so I can certainly understand.
Yes.
So, what life's epiphanies led you to the realization that you are a lesbian?
For me, Andrea, it came about when I had everything that society tells you you need to be happy. You know, you have to be married, and you have to have kids, and you have to have a house and a dog and a job. And I had all these things, and I still wasn't happy. And so I had to look inside myself and ask myself, you know, what is it going to take for me to be happy? And that was me living my true, authentic self. And so that's when I then came out as a lesbian.
You know, Johnny, I'll tell you, this is Kesson, that this is probably a very familiar story with a lot of women out there that become lesbians, especially later in life. You know, like Andre said, I had the same, pretty much the same experience. You know, I was married. I've been married a couple times, and I have two kids, and I was actually a late bloomer.
Mm-hmm.
And with me, it just dawned on me that my best friends and my girlfriends, I just was so much more emotionally close to them than I was my husband's.
Really?
And I had a terrible picker in men, by the way. But you did both did. You just realize, you know, my emotional connections are with women.
And
you have to let it, if you're smart, you find out early and you let it go and you accept it.
Certainly, I understand that. One of the things that I like in reading your book, you talk about your mom sensed that about you. And this comes back again to the idea that I've always believed our moms know everything about us because they basically watch us like a hawk. And then you ladies are moms and you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, mom knows us more than we know ourselves sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, my mom was very cute about it.
So how did you two meet?
Well, I was singing in a rock band at a party. And God, this beautiful long-legged blonde walks in, and I mean, I didn't think anything of it because she's 16 years younger than me, and I do not typically date younger people. But she knew, and she latched onto me fast, and you know, who could resist that? Really, so we met when I was singing at a rock. I was singing in a band, and I think she liked that.
How about you, Andrea? What attracted you to Kesson?
Well, gosh, she's gorgeous, and she's got this really awesome, confident personality. She's one of those people that is just innately cool, and she just has this aura about her that really draws people in, and she's so sweet. It's true. I'm not the only one. But Kesson has quite a big following because she's just beautiful and sweet and smart and wow.
The interesting part about when we talk about relationships, whether it's in the gay relationship or just the man-woman relationship, when it's all said and done, the beauty of it, I think, in your case as well, is that you all have been with different people and then you realize that, okay, they always say, you know, there's a certain spark and then it just sort of falters away.
Right.
In this situation, why is this relationship different and special?
Gosh, because, you know, we both, probably everything that we've been through together, Johnny. I mean, we have been through so much together, and we've been together 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Delaney is a big bond, but we are always have each other's backs, and we really.
Right.
And Andrea will tell you this too. I am the yin to her yang, whereas I'm like the outgoing one. I'm out there. She's actually the technical one who puts everything together.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be lost without Andrea. She comes behind me and she takes care of everything and lifts me up. And hopefully I do the same for her. But we really work well together, and we have a really great chemistry, romantic chemistry too.
Romantic chemistry, very passionate. And like Kasim was saying, I mean, we really just complement each other so well. We make a great team.
We love and admire each other.
And we make sure to support one another in whatever endeavors the other person has.
So that's probably what's missing maybe in past relationships. People have always asked me, how do you know that this is it? And to me, I think when you talk about the power of a relationship is that you just somehow know that all the arrows are pointing north, so to speak.
Right. We both had bad pickers in the past, and particularly with men.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, Johnny, too, another key thing for a relationship, have to keep that passion. And it's hard, I know, because you get in a daily rut and stress and the baby on the table pouring the salt and the dog trying to get out the dog door with his trash can lid on his head. I mean, that type of stuff is going to happen in everyday life.
Right.
Relationships are work. And if you really have a true love and a true bond, gosh, don't lose it. It takes commitment, and you really, like I said, passion is so important, and you have to have that romantic passion. You've got to make time for it, and don't go through the motion of like making love. Go through the emotion.
Right.
That is the key.
Wonderful. The formulas you are sharing, it's got nothing to do with the gay relationship. It's about all relationships to make it work.
Right.
It takes two. It takes that synergy of oneness to make it work.
Mm-hmm. And coming from two women who've been in, relationships with men and women,
right?
We can test, relationship is a relationship, period.
Right.
It doesn't matter gay or straight.
Right.
You have all the same complaints about your husband as you do your wife. She leaves her socks on the floor, or she doesn't, she's messy.
Yeah, right.
It's like, it doesn't matter if you're a guy or a girl, relationships are relationships, and they all have their issues, and
you have to accept one another.
That's true. How did this subject of surrogacy come about?
Well, we had gone to a party, and we had met up with some friends, and we were, I hadn't seen them in a long time, and I was showing them pictures of my kids, and then they started talking about their trials and tribulations in trying to get pregnant. This was another lesbian couple.
Mm-hmm.
And they told us they had been trying for 6 years and spent over $250,000. And they had tried to even adopt. They were getting turned down because they were gay. And, our heart just really broke for them. And I'm looking at my family, and here I have two kids, and it was so easy for me. And I just felt like, wow, if I could make these women's dreams come true, how awesome would that be?
At first, I was like, oh, no. because your first thought is, well, I don't want to be left with a baby. I'm 15.
Right.
I really didn't expect to start over again with the 5 and the 7-year-old at the time.
Right.
But she said, she's like, Heston, I'm going to be doing a really good thing. And then, I realized later she had a hidden skeleton in her closet, which she did not tell me about, which was another method she had for doing surrogacy, which you know about. You know it.
Mm-hmm.
But I eventually, how can you say no to someone who wants to do something right and good?
Sure.
So I jumped on the bandwagon too.
I love the book because it reminds me a lot in a way. Of course, this is surrogacy. It's a little bit different in my situation, but I was actually adopted at birth by my Malaysian mom, and she actually had experienced 3 miscarriages in her lifetime and finally adopted me. She actually had adopted someone else, a baby boy. Well, prior to adopting that baby boy, on her last miscarriage, she was actually 7 months pregnant, and she had a late miscarriage. Yeah, it was a boy, and then she adopted a son and the boy lived for about a month and then died. And I presume at that time it's probably like crib death or something like that. Who knows?
Right.
This was back in the 50s and 60s.
Wow.
And then she later adopted me from another family. And so I can relate a lot to the concept of sharing love. And it's interesting because people that really want to adopt, they are genuine with what they are wanting to do. The intentions are
right.
Same, but of course, a little bit different in your case. But having said that, I truly understand and appreciate the concept from where you guys are coming from in terms of, hey, let's do something special here. And then in reading your book also, I realized that there's a lot more things that are involved in surrogacy and adoption, especially for the gay community. I look at it that if someone is able to afford and can give a child all that he or she needs to succeed in life, to me, that qualifies. That's a major qualification in terms of moving forward. And of course, we are living in a world of a very structured sort of a way. And I understand that as well from the flip side of the equation. It's an eye-opener in terms of the difficulty of really actually wanting to adopt someone for the family.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you both have some requirements for Erica and Liz?
You know, Johnny, it's just like what you just said just now. Our only requirement was that they had such a strong desire to have a baby. I mean, they had been trying for so long. They were crying when they were telling us. And that they could provide and give this child everything that that child would need to have an exceptional life. And that was our only requirement.
Mm.
Right. We just wanted to make sure that the baby was going to be loved, that it was going to have a good life. And being that, you know, we had known these people, we were confident. I felt confident in them.
You've known Erica for a while, so that makes it a little bit more comfortable in so many ways.
Right. Most of her life.
What personal and family adjustments did you two have to make to accommodate this new endeavor?
Well, first of all, of course, we had to tell our family. We had to tell our kids, you know, hey, we're going to be growing a baby for our friends, but it's not really ours. And, you know, it was interesting concept, I think, for the kids. They didn't really quite understand it. At first, they were like, well, is it going to be our sister? And we're like, well, she's kind of, but not technically, but not really. You know, we're making the baby for our friends. And then, of course, explaining to my parents as well that, you know, I'm going to get pregnant and you're going to have a grandchild out in the world. That's not really your grandchild. You know, it was.
Well,
it really is, though, because I mean, we need to make something clear is that we used Andrea's eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So Delaney is biologically Andrea's child. We were trying to help our friends save money.
Right.
And eggs would cost them $5,000, so we're trying to help them save money.
Right. Very interesting. When did you discover that the baby is not going to be normal?
Well, she is normal. What we say in the Down syndrome community is not typical, but she's normal. And if you meet her, you're going to know that was one normal kid. But
we found out at an ultrasound. It's a 12-week ultrasound that they offer to look for abnormalities. But when the doctor recommended that for us, of course, we thought, oh, there's no way that this baby could have abnormalities. It took us 7 long months just to even get pregnant and all that we had been through.
We didn't think that we've already been through trials and tribulations trying to get pregnant. So we didn't think anything else would possibly come up now.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And the fact that I had, you know, two healthy pregnancies before that, we had no reason to believe that there would be anything wrong. But we did want to take that opportunity to see the baby up close and personal on a really detailed ultrasound. So
that's all we wanted. We were like, wow, we get to see Peanut. Of course we're going to go.
Right.
And we didn't even think something being wrong was like, we weren't even guessing.
Yeah.
Right. So we're at the ultrasound, and the ultrasound tech, you know, is showing us the baby, and we're all just, the baby's beautiful. She's got a great personality, really long legs. Everybody's joking about the basketball player that's growing in my stomach, and everybody's just so happy. The girls are crying because they're so happy. And then the ultrasound tech leaves, and the doctor comes in. And the whole tone just totally changed.
He was a pretty mean guy.
He was very blunt. And honestly, like, the first thing he asked us is, what is your level of education? Because I need to know how I can talk to you.
Wow.
And yeah, luckily we were all college-educated women, and so he told us, well, you know, there's something wrong with the baby. It likely has Down syndrome. Probably it's worse.
Yeah.
The baby has a heart defect, and then just started listing off all these complications that can happen.
Sure.
And offered to perform the termination right then and there. And it's funny, they say it so casually, like they're going to book you a reservation at the hotel.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah,
right,
I can fill that for you right now. Like, it's not a big deal. And we kind of were all just in shock. And like, wow, wait, let's just first get a definitive diagnosis. You're just telling us it's probably Down syndrome. Let's figure this out for sure before we go making any rash decisions.
Right.
So we decided to do CVS, which is like an amniocentesis. They take a biopsy from the placenta.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did this test, and we had to wait 3 long days to get the test results.
Yeah. And during that time, I mean, as you read the book, you're going to realize that I had a big phobia of just Kevin. Of people with Down syndrome, because, you know, back, Johnny, when I was young, they were still institutionalized. I didn't see them, and when I did see them, they were not given the chance to thrive. They were basically born in institutions, and when I saw them, they were terrifying to me.
Right.
So when we got this diagnosis, here we had gone through so much, and when you read the book, you're going to laugh and you're going to cry about all the crazy things we went through.
Yeah.
To make this baby, and then we get this diagnosis.
Right.
I was just like, what? So we went through that 3 days when we were waiting for the test results. I was in denial, and I was trying to convince myself that the doctors were wrong. And I did. I was successful. I came in and I told Andrea, this baby does not have Down syndrome. It's just got a heart problem. And it's sick, and now we need to love it so that it can thrive.
Sure.
Because up until that point, we have not loved that baby.
Right. Mm. Because because I'm making this baby for another couple, I kept myself emotionally detached.
That's
right. Now we know that this baby is sick and has something, you know, wrong with it. At least this is what the doctors have told us.
Right.
And we felt like, oh my gosh, maybe this baby just needs to feel love. If this baby can feel love, maybe that will fix everything and make it better.
Right.
And we loved her.
So we let our love in, and we fell in love with her.
In the book, you talk about the nature of the contract, and it's a business transaction. And it's got all the bells and whistles of a business transaction. That's it. So it's a thing, basically. What started out as a thing slowly evolved into something more than that, because that's where the natural nurturing instincts of you two ladies being mothers before kicked in. And the nature of love just starts to flow in understanding. And, of course, the whole process to this point, it took a while. You ladies were very conscientious about the expenses that were already been incurred by the eventual parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see the transition being very difficult in many ways. And then something happened within yourself that you realized that, wait a minute now, it's not a thing anymore. It's not an it. It is an actual person, a human being, that you ladies have to make a decision on.
Right. That's exactly what it was. It wasn't a hypothetical life anymore. And
right.
Part of our passion now is that almost every surrogacy contract that you sign is going to have a clause saying, hypothetically, what if there's something that makes
medical reasons.
There's something that makes the intended parents want you to terminate. And hypothetically, a surrogate's going to go, oh, okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
But that's hypothetical. Yeah. And that clause should not ever be in any contract.
Yeah.
Because a mom with life going inside of her, and it's real, it's not hypothetical, she may feel very differently.
Right.
And it's wrong to even have that in the contract.
Yeah. The flip side, with all due respect, when you talk about contractual situation here, from a surrogacy standpoint of view, it's a tough choice. It is a tough choice. And in your case, of course, it is your egg, and you have parental rights, no
right.
question about it. The good news, of course, the legal ramification obviously eventually got taken care of, but I know that played a big role in your situation as well. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, it was just an unneeded stress.
Yeah.
When,
yeah.
you know, Andrea, as you know, I mean, she was so just devastated when we got this diagnosis. I mean, she felt God was punishing her. Later, we realized that God was absolutely giving her a beautiful gift. But,
yeah.
And that when we told the parents, and the doctors were successful in terrifying the intended parents, and they let us know that they did not want the baby. They wanted us to terminate.
Right.
And they told us it was their decision and their decision alone, and basically asked us to butt out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, well, actually, honey, no, it's not. Your decision is whether you want to keep this baby, but it's not whether you want to terminate this baby.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that they're like, well, you legally signed a contract that you would terminate if we asked you to.
Mm-hmm.
And they briefly threatened, and it was very brief. I think it was maybe 2 days that was out there.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, well, you're facing a lawsuit if you don't terminate. Which was a stress that Andrea did not need at the time. But we did some legal counsel, and we were told that, you know, because the baby was biologically related to me, that there,
right.
you know, basically no judge is going to force me to terminate my own child. And,
precisely,
you know,
yeah.
said that they could try to sue you and spend, you know, waste their money and stuff, but it's really not going to go anywhere. So that helps relieve the stress a little bit. Yeah.
Now, both of you have taken ownership of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
What convinced you that early intervention could make a difference in Delaney?
You know, we had done so much research, and in doing our research, I had stumbled across blogs and videos and even studies done with supplements.
Cornell.
Through Cornell, they had done a study on mice with Down syndrome, and mice that were given choline, it dramatically reduced the cognitive delays. So I thought, you know, it's worth
harmless.
A shot. You know, it's something that you can, it's a vitamin that you can get from food, from eating
yeah.
food, and they recommend choline for pregnant women anyway.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, why wouldn't I do that? So I started taking supplements, and we enrolled Delaney in therapies and
before she was even born.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a plan of action before she was born on how we were going to help her thrive and how we could best support her so that she could live up to her full potential.
That's what I like about what you ladies were doing, because you were basically doing this while the child was basically in the fetus stage, and you
right.
were interjecting all these things in some ways. And I say this respectfully, you guys were doing your own little experiment. Say, hey, we got nothing to lose. I mean,
right.
you don't want to go through the process and say, well, if only I've done that, then it could have been a different outcome, so
right.
to speak. So I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was very courageous of y'all to do that.
Choline is a supplement. It's harmless. So we thought, well,
sure.
it's not going to hurt.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
and we think it's paid off in spades.
Yeah. And, well, other things that you've done, I mean, you talk about talking to the baby and singing and those kind of things. And I think it's a different way of approaching what you did and so forth. So I thought that was very interesting. And of course, Delaney was born with a heart condition that was corrected afterwards. You ladies were expecting that anyway. And the good news that
we were.
It was easily corrected in some ways.
Yes. We were prepared.
How challenging of this whole process for both of you, and especially for you, Keston, in terms of, like you were talking about, been there, I've raised two kids, now I've got my partner, I've got the two kids, and then now all of a sudden, oh my gosh, supposedly with all these challenges. So how's that in terms of your mindset? How does that go?
It was crazy. But, you know, getting with Andre in the first place with two young children
yeah.
was not in my plan. You know, they say that God laughs at you when you have plans. And God sure laughed at me, because I thought, you know, I was, you know, in my late 40s, and I was going to go to lesbian pool parties and golf tournaments, and I was going to have fun. Now.
Yeah.
I was
yeah.
raising my kids, but then I met this beautiful woman, and as a family, we just really clicked. But
yeah.
I certainly did not want to start over, particularly with a child with a disability that terrified me.
Right, right.
But so it was definitely challenging. But, you know, something something strange when you know you're supposed to do something, mm-hmm. and you're like, I always say that, you know, I was kind of a selfish person, and mm-hmm. and I had this discrimination against people with Down syndrome. They would come in a store, and I would walk the other way and look the other way, and luckily, a higher power believed in me, and because I realized that, you know, I loved this baby, and I was going to fight for this baby, and I just never looked back. I don't even know how to describe it. I never doubted my decision, and even to this day, I never look back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that God changed my plans, and he believed in me.
Andrea, during these challenging times, what really helped you two to really help you guys together?
Definitely our love for one mm-hmm. another. Like I was saying earlier, you know, we always are there to support each other. And, you know, if I was having a day where maybe I was struggling with things emotionally, you know, Keston would come and make me feel like, you know what, it's going to be okay, don't worry about it, and vice versa. You know, there was a couple times where we kind of were like, wow, what are we doing? Or you start freaking out about, you know,
fears.
Right, all your fears start creeping in. What if we were being too optimistic? What if, you know, what if she does have all these things that the doctor said she would have? You start really second-guessing yourself.
Yeah.
But really, our love for each other and our love for Delaney really is what helped push us through and keep us close and together.
She gave us signals during pregnancy, Delaney did, that she was going to be okay. And I don't even know how to describe it. She never let us down, ever, even during pregnancy. Like when the doctor said that she was going to have a big deformity on the back of her head.
Yeah.
We studied all about that. And then in the very next ultrasound, we knew that she probably would not have that deformity on the back of her head. And we went into the ultrasound, and the doctor didn't even have to say anything because we saw that it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not have that deformity. And she just, from the minute we said that we're going to keep her and save her, she never let us down. It was as if she always knew that we were her parents.
Keston, in writing your book, you mentioned a lot about your mom. And I mentioned to you before we got on the air on how I could relate to the relationship that you had your mom and the final hours and days that you had spent together with her. One of the things that I gather from you by nature as a person in your writings, you have a special way of understanding the meaning of life. And I think that in the process with Delaney as well as Andrea, you made a very strong commitment in terms of a paradigm shift about the meaning of life and going through and adjusting your personal life to make things happen. So tell us a little bit about that, about how you have, I guess, arrived to this point in your life, because you have used the word an old soul for your son, but perhaps you yourself has the old soul in you.
Gosh, maybe. I think that I have an old soul, but I think this is part of my transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, if you believe in past lives and growing in each mm-hmm. life, but I think, well, I think I have an old soul. I also think I had a young soul because of my fear of disabled people.
Yeah.
And which was really, I mean, I'm ashamed to say how I was. I really am, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
But in the transition of, you know, understanding, Delaney taught us this. Delaney showed us the true meaning of life just by this whole situation of her fighting and her overcoming all these obstacles during pregnancy, because mm-hmm. her biggest obstacle and the biggest threat to Delaney's life, I realized, was discrimination. 9 out of 10 babies like her that are diagnosed are supposedly terminated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it enlightened me. And it's, gosh, I don't know if God or whoever, if you believe in any higher powers, we're kind of, we're open, but we don't we don't say we're Christian or Buddhist or anything, but we believe in a higher power for sure. And that higher power gave us this story and gave us Delaney
mm-hmm.
and showed us that life has a lot of cruelty in it, and there's something we can all do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all talking about anti-gay marriage or anti-this and anti-that, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all the bullying that goes on in schools. And, you know, we can be better people, mm-hmm. all of us. We can mm-hmm. teach our children to be better people. And Delaney taught us that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really mm-hmm. all Delaney, Johnny.
You have sort of, over the period of time, during what you have experienced in life, to me, you have sort of evolved in your way of thinking. And I know you're hard on yourself, like you were talking about, in terms of in the past that you've dealt with people with Down syndrome, or maybe people with special needs, for example. And I have the same experience in the sense that I like to think this way, because I know myself personally. My first experience with special needs people was in the Special Olympics that was held at LSU years ago in the 80s. My concern was, like, I don't want to offend these people. And I use the word these people here in this particular case just to explain my thought back then. Because it's not that I'm afraid of them, but I was in a situation where I don't want to do any subtle move that would upset them, thinking that they don't have the cognitive ability to process thought process, mm-hmm. right? So we're naive on our own way. To my delight, I found out that, you know what? I'd rather be with them than with us, because they are genuine. It's so funny. And I say this all the time, because I find that they are very genuine. When they say they love it, and ladies, you can relate to this. If somebody says, oh, I love the dress you wear, and you're wondering mm-hmm. whether, is it true, or is she just saying something, you know, to make me feel good, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, because we have this thing, not necessarily politically correct, but it's just this, you know, like, are we saying it because we want to make sure, because we have this thinking thought process, versus someone that
very
is
true.
Just plain genuine. I mean, just telling you, mm-hmm. oh, I love that. I mean, you can see it's
yeah,
real.
True.
Yeah, it's from the heart. So that's the uniqueness I came to the understanding. And with due respect, like, say, Kasten, I think that what your mom went through, other people, like I said, because if it's not like us, then they're abnormal. For
right.
I'm trying to cast a very wide net here, but I'm just saying that from that perspective that I'm giving people the benefit of the doubt, because we're always afraid of what we don't know and don't understand. And
that's very true.
Yeah, so that's the uniqueness. You know, all our lives, in all actuality, is governed by two separate but equal forces, love or fear.
Mm-hmm. And very true.
Yeah. So if we let love lead us, then we would think differently. On the other hand, if we allow fear to lead us, then we think differently.
That's
different
extremely
context.
Insightful and true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. And Andrea, from your end, I think by nature in reading the book, you are that lovable person. And not that you're not, Kasten, don't get me wrong when I say this.
Oh, no, she's lovable.
And then it's interesting
right.
because Kasten, that you've lived, I mean, you obviously lived life and you got an old soul and whatnot and so forth. So this is the real world in some ways. And so I think the union that you ladies have really complement each other very well.
Thank you. We do.
We think so too. We do.
Why did you decide to write the book?
Because of my past discrimination and how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you would read in the news about how kids with Down syndrome are getting kicked off of planes or getting kicked out of restaurants. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the discrimination against people with Down syndrome is quiet and subtle, but it exists.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you because I discriminated. And there were a lot of people that are like the person that I was. And, you know, Delaney's story is not an LGBT story. It's not a Down syndrome
right.
story. It is a human interest story, and what
that's right.
Delaney made me a better person,
mm-hmm.
and she does every day. And we were hoping, you know, by sharing her story, if you put your head in the sand and you say, I don't want to tell people our story, you're not helping society. And
yeah.
I raised my kids to be members of society, and like we go out and give socks to the homeless and toothpaste to the homeless and candy and We can all be better people, and Delaney mm-hmm. taught me that. And Delaney, what we went through taught me that. And I feel like by sharing her story, that people can take away with it something, regardless if you're LGBT or if you have somebody, you know somebody with Down syndrome.
Right.
Maybe you can take away something in your heart, a human interest in your heart that can touch you and make you understand yourself a little bit better. And we just felt that it was a powerful story.
I agree. When I read the book, it was very interesting enough to understand. And I've talked to some people that have contacted me about the book, and it's a human story. And I say this respectfully, it's got nothing to do with the LGBT community or Down syndrome in a sense, because in the end, the core, the very core, the message in the book is about the nature of love, the meaning of life.
It is, absolutely.
I'm
glad you said that.
Mm-hmm. How is Delaney today?
Delaney is amazing. She's 2.5 years old. She's on target developmentally with, other kids that are her same age that do not have her disability. She sings and dances and talks and runs and jumps and plays.
Role plays.
She's extremely, extremely smart.
She manipulates just like any other two-year-old.
Yeah, extremely mischievous.
She'll tell us to look over there so she can get something to mischief.
Yeah, she's
like we said, Delaney's never let us down.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Mm-hmm. And not that if she was slow that she would let us down, because we love her and with Down syndrome. Or if she was slower, God, we would be A-okay with that. We don't have any problems with that. But the fact that all of our intervention has paid off. We hope that other people see that there are things you can do too. You don't have to terminate this life.
Sure, I understand. That brings me to the question. Please tell us about the Delaney Odd Doll Foundation.
Well, the Delaney Odd Doll Foundation, we're actually in the beginnings of it. We are hoping that the book kicks it off, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's two things we want to do. First of all, we want to hopefully affect legislature when doctors give a diagnosis, a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's really important that they give a fair and balanced diagnosis, not just you should terminate, you should terminate, you should terminate, and if you don't terminate, you need to know that your insurance might not take care of it, that your baby might be blind. And, I mean, there's two sides to every story. We knew from our research that the doctors were exaggerating. But other parents might not know that. And we think that legislature has to show that doctors should be legally required to give fair and balanced education, not just doom and gloom, terminate, terminate.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, the early intervention that we started, we're a poor family, but we managed to squeeze out $200 a month for Delaney supplements today.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's not covered by insurance. Her Nutravine D, which is another supplement that we give her, similar to choline now that she's born. There are a lot of poor families out there that can't afford it, and we want the Delaney Odd Doll Foundation to be able to provide those supplements to low-income families with the Delaney Odd Doll Foundation.
I see. Where can someone go to buy the book, get more information about you two, and keep up with the latest happenings with Delaney?
Well, if you want to keep up with Delaney, she has, if you look up Delaney Sky Odd Doll on Facebook, we pretty much chronicle a day in a life with Delaney. We show how advanced she is and how she has almost 10,000 very loyal fans that follow her every day, and they just love her because she will make you smile every day. She is a true, real-life hero. But Delaney Odd Doll Foundation, you can get some information, but really savingdelaney.com is our website. SavingDelaney.com. And you can buy the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads. It's pretty much available anywhere that any book is available. And today is our kickoff release day, by the way.
Fantastic. So. Wonderful. Congratulations.
If you go to Amazon
again
and look up Saving Delaney. Saving Delaney on Amazon, you can find it.
Tell us a little bit about your project. I know this was started a few years back, about wanting Disney to have a Down syndrome princess.
Well, you know, Johnny, like I said, I grew up not unfamiliar with people with Down syndrome in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
I was a Disney kid. I grew up a Disney kid. And it dawned on us. Our daughter Jules was singing and dancing, watching Frozen, and all of a sudden she sat down and started to cry and was really sad. And I said, Jules, what is wrong? And she said, you know, we can never, Delaney and I could never be like Anna and Elsa. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, of course you can. Sure you can. Delaney can do anything. And she said, no, Mommy-O, there are no princesses like Delaney.
Mm-hmm.
And it dawned on me, she's right. There's not a lot of representation in children's animated features. And gosh, if anybody could do it right, it would be Disney. They are, mm-hmm. they are heroes in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. if Disney included characters with Down syndrome or other disabilities in their children's animated features, we believe that children would grow up without the fear of people like Delaney, and it would stop the future of that discrimination that will eventually develop in these kids.
Sure.
They will be
sure.
familiar.
Yeah.
Maybe had I grown up with characters like with Down syndrome in my films when I was a little Disney kid, mm-hmm. back in the 1960s and 70s, maybe I wouldn't have been afraid.
Right. We can use media as a form of education to the masses. That's what you're really advocating here.
Oh, yes. And, you know, we got a lot of flack from that because a lot of people in the Down syndrome community were like, you guys, who cares about Disney? We need to focus on laws and job equality for our kids. And, you know,
yeah.
we all have our pulpits. And we all, you know, I follow the Dalai Lama way, which is mm-hmm. if you can't help them, at least don't hurt them.
Right.
And we all have our way. This just happened to be something that, because I have kids, that we did. And Disney responded. Hopefully someday they'll follow through. And I believe in them. So
mm-hmm.
I'm a Disney mm-hmm. fan all the way.
I understand. Yeah, yeah, I understand. Well, that's interesting. How about your take on it, Andrea? What are your thoughts?
I agreed with Keston, and I felt like, wow, what a great opportunity for Disney to educate the masses. They have such a widespread power that they really could be a huge influential force here. They can make a difference. Right. That is definitely somebody who could very easily make a difference with something so small as including a character with a disability.
Right, right.
She was on board. And, you know, it's funny, Johnny, because we put the petition up and we're like, wow, what if we get 1,000 signatures? That'd be so cool.
Right.
We had 1,000 signatures in an hour. And then it was like,
that's
oh,
fantastic.
My God, what if we get 10,000 signatures? And we have that in a few days. I think we almost have 100,000 signatures right now.
That's amazing what you ladies are doing, because this is an old statistics, but I think according to the Health Resources and Services Administration, a total of 10.2 million children, or roughly about 14% of the nation's children, have special needs.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge number. And if we can
Absolutely.
Educate the public through mass media, through Disney in this case, and it's not about one way or the other, it's more about information out there. It's putting out good information to make people understand and have a good idea, because we are in the information technology age now. And so as
Absolutely.
We get those information out there, it's only better for the masses.
Absolutely. And what better way to do that in children's hearts?
Correct. Start
right.
from the
young. Before they develop that fear, before they develop the discrimination, before, you know,
mm-hmm.
my past life drives me. My past discrimination, which I'm so ashamed of, it drives me.
Yeah. Well, again, from the past, it's more about the knowledge that you're not aware of. It puts you in a position.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not.
Exactly.
Necessary.
That's why it's so important to get the information out there.
Right. Again, as I mentioned before, it's fear-driven rather than love-driven. And so, but
Absolutely.
You're at the point now, you have shifted to the love-driven aspects of your life. How has writing this book impacted both of you personally?
Well, for me, growing up being such a private person, it was really hard to say, you know what, okay, you can write about me, you can write about the skeletons in my closet, and I'm going to expose myself for the whole world. It was very, very hard and scary for me. But, you know, Keston and I, we keep our eye on the prize, and that basically is, you know, saving families and saving babies and saving lives. And I knew that other people could learn so much from our story that I had to just do it and be okay with it because I want the world to be a better place for Delaney.
Mm-hmm. What advice do y'all have for families expecting special needs children?
First thing they should do is research. Mm-hmm. Talk to the parents that have paved the way for you because they're a wonderful resource for you. Take with you what makes sense to you and leave what doesn't make sense to you. But go to your local Down syndrome organizations or, you know, whatever disability it might be and get educated by the people who actually experience that real life.
Mm-hmm.
And then understand, you know, if there are things you can do, try to do those things. Like we discovered the colon. We thought, well, that's not going to hurt Delaney. So, and Johnny, we think it's paid off in spades. So get educated. That's what we say.
Wonderful.
For me also, I would say, is to just treat them the same. That mm-hmm. is one of the things that I feel really helps Delaney, is that everybody in our family treats her the same. We don't treat her differently because she has a disability. You know, the kids, they
right,
play with
right.
her, she plays with them. You know, we have all the same expectations for her that we did for our other kids. You know, we just want to show that with lots of love, early intervention, and just, you know, treating them like they're any other person, I feel really, really has helped Delaney so much.
So true. What is the road ahead for you two and Delaney?
We're going to keep going. We're the three musketeers. We're actually the 10 musketeers. We have a house of 10 people right now with my old adult kids and my grandkids. But we know at the end of the day it's going to be the three of us, the three musketeers. And we encourage Delaney to do anything that she can do. We hope she goes to college, she gets married. She does everything that she wants to do. She loves music. If she wants to follow that, we'll have her follow that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to write another book about raising Delaney and some of the crazy things we've been through in raising her.
Mm-hmm.
And Jared and I, our youngest son is, he and I are writing a book called River Rats, which is a children's book.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to keep doing our activism, Johnny.
Wonderful. That's very interesting. Looking forward to all those wonderful projects that you have in line. By the way,
mm-hmm.
we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning? And since there are two of you, so we would love to have two different recipes for living life.
Well, I would say, this is Catherine, what I would say is follow your heart, and the only thing that you can't do is can't, because you can do anything. You can overachieve and accomplish
mm-hmm.
any goal, obstacle set in your way. Live simple. Live with love. And like I said, if you can't help them, at least don't hurt them. And live your life to be the best person you could possibly be.
Wonderful. And how about you, Andrea?
Well, unfortunately, I'm like, they kind of overlap a little bit, but we're like one person. For me, I agree with living simply. I think that's something that's really important. We try to teach our kids that it's not about what you have or don't have. It's not about money. You could be rich in other ways. It's not all about money. And also do what you can for other people. You know, if you see somebody that you can help, why wouldn't you do it? You know, we try to teach our kids too, you know, to be compassionate and to be thoughtful of other people and empathetic. And so I would recommend that for everybody.
In living that way, we have a very rich, fulfilling life.
Absolutely. We are very rich.
Well, you two ladies certainly have a beautiful heart. So that's the most important thing. In the end, that's the drive, the fuel that drives everything that you do in your life. And so what you've done is all heart driven. So for that, I certainly hope that will continue, and God's grace will always be with you too, as far as that goes. Ladies, thank you for the wonderful recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Pauline Middleton. She is a love coach. Pauline and I will be discussing her novel One Woman, Three Men, a story about modern love and sex. Pauline actually lived with the three-man model for a period in her own life. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Ladies, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed
Thank
day.
Thank you
to
very
you
much, John.
And
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.